Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. This is your host, Dan Weatherspoon. Question 7 of the Temple Recommend interview reads, do you support, affiliate with, or agree with any group or individual whose teachings or practices are contrary to or oppose those accepted by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? This Temple Recommend question kind of comes up a lot in various online forums, especially for those who are in faith struggles or transitions of some sort. But it came up in the news most recently when a Los Angeles area Mormon bishop wrote on his blog, kind of in the aftermath of Harry Reid's defeat in the big midterm elections, and Harry Reid, the Mormon Senate Democratic leader, was defeated. And he exulted that this is because he felt like Reid went far beyond any kind of ability to answer Temple Recommend question number 7, because he is a leader of the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party has several areas that he believes are directly contrary to the Mormon Church. Number 1, the Equal Rights Amendment. Number 2, and of course, here's his lovely phrasing, a woman's unfettered right to murder her baby in utero. Very neutral language there. And then the third reason that Reid should never get a Temple Recommend is because of Democratic platform's support of same-sex marriage. So that kind of brought things up in the news a little bit. Church spokesperson did a great job, actually, of telling Bishop Paredes. Here's the quote, Dale Jones. Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are, of course, entitled to express their own political opinions. However, publishing such views while using a title of a church officer, even if only as a leader of a local congregation, as in this case, is entirely inappropriate. So it's a tempest in a teapot in some ways, but it does give us a chance to kind of just talk quickly here on Mormon Matters this week about Temple Recommends, and especially question 7, and just sort of how we approach it. I've got 3 wonderful guests with us. Claudia Bushman is back for the 3rd time on Mormon Matters. Claudia, you're calling us from Worcester, Massachusetts. You guys are doing something interesting back there. Reintroduce yourself, if you would, to our listeners.
All right, Claudia Bushman. I'm now, Richard and I have a wonderful title. We are Distinguished Senior Scholars at the American Antiquarian Society, and we are here for a year, an academic year. So that's 9 months. And of course, that's a wonderful place to be if you know that wonderful library. And we live in a little brown house on the grounds where I say the 3 bears used to live. Great to be here.
Nice. And my understanding is you're using this year to research Boston in the 1870s or something like that is what you're focusing on?
Yes, what am I doing? I can't even think of the word, but I have a diary from 1870, and I'm putting it in context.
Nice. Wonderful. And Claudia, you're a well-known rabble-rouser in Mormonism for years. It's part of the reasons I wanted to have you on here. You're one of the founders of Exponent 2, and what other kind of forward, pushing-the-needle kind of things have you done?
I don't know, Dan. That's really kind of a pejorative way to introduce one to being a rabble-rouser. You know, I think I'm a good member of the church. I do what I'm supposed to, I think. Anyway.
I was teasing you mostly because of this affiliation with people who, aren't fully accepted by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so I know that you just have a history of not being overly stressed out about that.
Well, I do have one of my credentials, which I bring out to justify my existence on the other side, which is that I was New York State's Mother of the Year in 2002.
Awesome.
So that's pretty.
Nice. Well, welcome back to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Thanks.
Geralee Renshaw, welcome back to Mormon Matters. We had you on once when you talked about children kind of and their faith journeys and talking to their parents about it. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Would you let people know a little bit about what you do, especially in kind of these Mormon transition type groups?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in the church first. I have four grown children, all married, and I met Dan a little over 4 years ago when I had a child kind of in a faith transition type of a situation, and it was all new to me. I had never experienced anything like this before, nothing in my life in having lived as an active, faithful member of the church really prepared me to understand it. And so I got on the internet and I started Googling things and I found Dan Witherspoon and a few other people and I reached out to him, and Dan was really wonderful to me, just really spent a lot of time and put together some thoughtful messages for me, and we've kind of become friends, and and I just have latched on to him, and I've kind of found my way into you know, Mormon discussion groups, and currently I'm serving as a moderator on A Thoughtful Faith, which is a group that has become really important to me in my journeying through learning new things and trying to, you know, have a positive outlook on it, because the church is still important to me and I find great value in it. And that's why I'm drawn to people like Dan Witherspoon, who I see that I see modeling those kind of things for me. So thank you, Dan.
You embarrass me all the time. Nobody hyperlinks my name on Facebook more than you. And
I know.
I appreciate it. And we're not just kind of friends. We're great friends and stuff like that. And I'm even going to have you tell a story pretty soon off the bat about something when we went out to dinner, so okay. That you shared. So thanks so much for being on.
Sure. Thank you.
Devery Anderson, you and I have been friends for, I bet, 15, 20 years now. Even probably 17 or 18, I would guess now. You're the historian and knows this stuff, but I've never had you on the podcast, but I know you've done lots of other Mormon podcasts. Can you share a little bit about your background and maybe where people might have heard you before?
Already, yeah, and it's been 20 years now, just so ooh, you know. Yeah, it feels like 17 or 18. I wish it was. That would make me a couple years younger. But
right.
So, I currently work for Signature Books in Salt Lake City as an editor, and I've been there for 3 years and so far, and I edited so far 3 published books from Signature Books dealing with the Nauvoo. Well, the first 2 volumes were Joseph Smith's Quorum of the Anointed, which is a history of the temple endowment in Nauvoo prior to the completion of the temple. When the endowment was revealed and it was performed above the red brick store, the meetings of the 65 or so people that that received their endowments during that period were known as the Quorum of the Anointed. So that book, and then its companion volume, The Nauvoo Endowment Companies, which is also a documentary history of the 2 months that the temple was open, from December 46 to February of 1847. So those 2 volumes came out together in 2005, documenting that Nauvoo period. And then the 3rd volume, The Development of LDS Temple Worship, which picks up from 1846 to the year 2000, dealing with just the development of temple worship, as the title implies or states directly. These volumes are all based on documents, either diary entries from church leaders or other participants, official letters, handbook of instruction, a lot of quotations from that, arranged chronologically, that really tells you kind of a fun story of how temple worship unfolded, at least from that standpoint, from letters and that. It doesn't go into the ceremonies or anything in any detail like that, but it just helps people understand some of the policies and how they developed and when they ended, and some of the backstory that led to certain policies. So so those 3, that's if most people who know who I am in Mormon studies know me from those volumes, because they've been well received and they've been reprinted a few times. So that's pretty much it. And also done a history of dialogue that I've been working on as long as I've known Dan. So, and that's been published in so far in 4 installments in Dialogue between spring or summer 1999 issue through 2008, and I have two more I'm doing that I really want to wrap those up in 2015. Also working on a biography of Willard Richards, which I've been working on. All these projects started like in the mid-90s, and so I can't wait to wrap them all up. But I'm anxious to finish Willard Richards, and I'm hoping to at least have the manuscript done also in 2015, and it'll probably come out in a couple years after that. So
sweet. And just so everybody know, he's not Mormon studies related, but Devery is one of the leading experts on the Emmett Till murder, and he's got a book that's coming out from University of Mississippi Press, so the first of the year, right, Dev?
It'll be out in August for the 60th anniversary of the case. So still okay. They're editing it right now and that, awesome. And so that's the plan for August of 15.
Awesome. Forward written by Julian Bond. So anyway, congratulations on all those projects.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I thought you guys, it would be good just to kind of start with a very personal story. Gerald Lee, I'm going to throw it to you, if that's all right. You agreed to share. You could share as many details or not as you want. But when we went to dinner 5-6 weeks ago, you just happened to tell this story of the most recent time that you went in for the Temple Recommend process. And I'll just let you take it away. I think it'll help frame a lot of things today.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Yeah. So just to start out with, I'm going to say that my intention is to somehow help other people and not to be critical in any way of leadership in general or my leadership in particular. But several months ago, I was a few weeks before my Temple Recommend was to expire. And so on a Tuesday night, I thought, oh, I'll go over. I know there's the bishopric at the church tonight and as well as the stake leaders. So without an appointment, I went over to the church. And I went, of course, I went into my ward level interview first. And the member of the bishopric, of course, is well known to me. I've been in this ward for a long time. And so is he. We exchanged some friendly conversation and pleasantries before he began to ask me the questions. And on the first 6 questions, I gave all the appropriate answers and everything was going smoothly. And then we got to question 7 and he read, "Do you support, affiliate with, or agree with any group or individual whose teachings or practices are contrary to or oppose those accepted by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?" Now, this question has always kind of been intriguing to me. And from what I had understood, and I think we'll learn more about that tonight with Devery, the expert here, this its origins were kind of in fundamentalist polygamy. But the interesting thing about this is that this particular member of my bishopric I knew has a very close family member who is currently practicing polygamy. And so I thought it would be interesting to ask him what he thought about this question. So I said, "What does that mean to you?" And I was somewhat startled about the response that I got, which was, as best as I can remember it, "Oh, it's all about the gay issue and supporting the brethren. Whether or not you support the brethren," I think is what was said. And I was really surprised. Wow. That was not what I expected to hear. And in an instant, I had kind of a flood of thoughts and emotions. And just to give you a little history, in our particular ward, we have several families with gay children. And I would say several families that are struggling. A family that recently stopped coming to church because they don't feel like it's a safe place for their children and their family to be. And and these people are friends of mine. They're people that I know and that I love. And so I realized kind of in this moment that I was probably somewhat of a concern to my bishopric because of my friendships with these people. And I had all these mixed emotions about that, about this was now the topic of my Temple Recommend question. And so I began to talk a little bit and explain my situation on it. And I remember that I'm kind of an animated, loud person by nature. And I remember that I felt that I got very quiet and soft-spoken. And I think in my mind, I was thinking, this could really be an important moment. And I need to be really careful about what I say and thoughtful about what I say. And so I began to explain that this issue had touched the lives of many people that I love and that I was watching some difficult situations unfold and that it was hard for me to watch people struggle with whether there really was a place for them in the church or not. And so I got what I felt like was a little bit of pushback from him in kind of a kind way. But he again, approached the idea of, that it's important to support the brethren and supporting the prophet came up. And so I kind of mentioned, I said I wondered if he was aware of the question that was thrown out to President Monson, or maybe it was thrown out to the first presidency, but President Monson answered it on the day that the new first presidency was announced. And it was Peggy Fletcher Stack that threw out the question. And it was at a press conference, and it was covered in the Deseret News as well as other papers. And she asked whether church members could disagree with the faith's opposition to legalizing same-sex unions and still remain in good standing. And President Monson said the answer depends on what the disagreement is. If it's an apostasy situation, that would not be appropriate. If it's something political, there is room for opinion here and there on either side. And so I explained to this member of the bishopric that I felt that this kind of fell into that, political leanings. I told him that I understood that this was a difficult issue in and out of the church, that I thought people had a right to, to feel differently about things, and that I respected the fact that most of the leaders of our church feel a certain way about it. But through my lived experiences, I was seeing things somewhat differently, and it was changing my heart on the issue. So I told him that this was also something that I saw as a matter of life or death, and that for, if I were the mother of a gay child who ended up taking their own life because they felt somehow broken, or that there was not a place for them in the church because of things I had taught them or that they had heard at church, that as a mother, I would give anything to be able to go back and just love them and make them feel accepted. And that I just explained that that's where my heart was on the issue, that I thought this was really difficult, but that I couldn't help but feel that way through the things I had experienced. And at that point, he agreed that there were difficulties involved, and we kind of began to move forward. At some point, I was wondering whether we were going to progress past question number 7 or not, but we did. And so I left the office that night feeling really emotionally drained. And I thought, I'm here, I'm at the church, I'm just down the hall from the stake, I should just go finish this. But I don't know whether I'm really up for another long, this was a lengthy conversation. I'm not sure whether I'm really up for going through this again. We had a new stake presidency that was virtually unknown to me. I didn't really know them. I wasn't sure what I was walking into. And I kind of felt like I was on the radar of some leaders and that I was a concern. And so I walked down the hall and I thought, I'm just going to be brave and I'm just going to go in there and do it. So I went into the office of a member of the stake presidency and I didn't say anything about what I had just experienced. I didn't say anything at all. And similar to the way my first interview started, we exchanged, friendly pleasantries and how's your family and those kind of things. And I had kind of made a mental note to myself as I was walking down the hall. Just answer yes or no, Geralee. Don't ask any questions this time.
Don't need another 20 minute
Don't
depressing.
Open the door for discussion again, right? So that was my plan. So we get to number 7, and that really was my plan. And out of my mouth again comes, what does that mean to you? And as soon as I said it, I thought, oh dear, what have I done? And the most incredible and unexpected thing happened. Now, he knows nothing about what I've just gone through down the hall in my ward offices. And he, without knowing any of this, he said, well, I can tell you this, it has nothing to do with the gay issue.
Awesome.
And I was stunned, and it was an emotional moment for me. And I, I thought he doesn't even know what I just went through, but he knew the right thing that I needed to hear. And so tears started coming down my cheeks, and he could see my emotion. And then he added, and I have never answered the question that way to anyone before. So then I began to tell him I thanked him profusely. Thank you so much for saying that, I just walked out of my ward offices feeling, confused and just full of emotion and feelings. I wasn't prepared for that to have happened. And he just was so kind, and his little eyes welled up with tears himself. And he just, in a gesture of reaching out to me without touching me, kind of reached across his hand across the table, just in reaching out to me and just you know, said, I have gay family members too, and I know this is really hard. And he asked me a series of questions. What can we be doing in the church to be able to, you know, to help these people feel more comfortable? What are we doing wrong? I mean, we had this beautiful long conversation where I was just really able to share with him the difficulty as I saw it, and that I really wanted people to be able to stay in the church if they wanted to, and that I wasn't sure this was even a part of the Temple Recommend questions, and I didn't know why it had come up. And anyway, so we had this incredible exchange, and I don't really remember much about what happened with the rest of the questions, except I left that night with a sign, Temple Recommend, so it all worked out good. And he made me feel very safe, and I felt loved, and I felt understood. And it was just this incredible experience where I felt somehow he knew that I needed to hear that. And it was a beautiful thing. And I came home from the church that night. My husband had gone off to a meeting or doing some visits or something, and he didn't even know that I was going to – I hadn't even mentioned in advance that I was going to go do this interview. And when he came home, I was laying in the middle of the family room floor, just sprawled out, just trying to process all that I had just experienced. And he's like, what's up with you? And I said, well, I went to get my Temple Recommend tonight. And he's like, oh, well, is everything okay? You know? Anyway, so I shared it with him. And, you know, it was a wild kind of crazy experience, but it had a great ending. And I did feel like, you know, this stake leader was very in tune and in touch with what I needed to hear. And so, you know, I got two very different mixed messages in the same building on the same night.
Absolutely.
From my leaders. But
crazy, crazy stuff.
So that's what happened.
Hey, thanks for sharing.
Sure.
So, Claudia and Devery, does this surprise you that question 7 would have been taken the way it was by the bishop's counselor? Had either of you ever even imagined that that would be the issue, that they would sort of fall under this category?
No, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Claudia, have you heard that or encountered anything like that?
Well, we all know that those questions are very general and that they are meant to mean something that is not always clear, and they can be interpreted in many ways. So I think I have heard different interpretations to those things. Sometimes when I'm interviewed, I say that question makes no sense to me, and they say, well, what it means is this.
Oh. And,
but I said, well, it doesn't mean that to me, and so on. But I've given up arguing with them. I don't do that anymore.
I suppose with me, because I directly asked once about the, or what it meant, and this is, it might even have been when I was getting a Temple Recommend interview to do baptisms for the dead as a kid. But I remember the bishop being specific that if you're sympathetic to those practicing polygamy, if you're on the verge of joining a polygamist group and you're not letting us know that, and you want to basically disguise yourself as a Latter-day Saint, then that's where the problem was. And I've always just had it in my head. Although it's a different time where even just, you know, getting to get, and I suppose one thing that has convinced me over the years that people, when the brethren complain that nobody listens to them, I think the biggest test on that one is when they try to talk about how they're politically neutral in the church and then nobody really believes it. The number of times I've been criticized for my political views, saying how can you be a Mormon and believe this, and how can you be one of us and believe this, and they've just listened to the First Presidency letter read in sacrament meeting the week before. That doesn't seem to sink in, and so, and I see that the same thing with Temple Recommends interviews and questions, not just this question, but people kind of bishops and maybe stake presidents too, who just decide on a number of things. What makes a person worthy or not to go to the temple? I remember when the consolidated meeting schedule first came out in 1980, our bishop announced from the pulpit that because now Relief Society was going to be on Sunday mornings and the men were expected to be at priesthood, so the women were expected to be at Relief Society, and he announced from the pulpit that women who don't come to Relief Society will not be issued a temple recommend. And I don't know how long that lasted. At the time, I just thought, wow, he's bold, and thought that was probably right. I don't know how long that lasted, if a stake president agreed with it, if that was typical at the time, because suddenly Relief Society was part of the Sunday meetings and was a requirement. I don't know how far that went, but I now I look back on it. And I know of other cases where personally, you know, my own bishop has told me certain things that he was requiring now for temple recommend interviews. It went beyond the questions. I suppose if you come up with your own questions, it's easy to invent your own definition of questions that are already there. And I found that just to be true over the years, and not to get off the subject on that so much, as I think about temple recommend interviews, and as I compiled documents for this book, I was really struck by how early on, before there were actual questions, when bishops were given advice as far as what made a person worthy, the questions really were geared towards conduct more than belief. As I look at one of the earliest ones, you know, they talked about, you know, make sure you pay your tithing, you're doing this and doing this. But as far as belief, early on, one of the only belief requirements was that, don't speak evil of the Lord's anointing, which would be, I guess, conduct, but also if you believe that they're, you know, it reflects a belief as well that they're inspired. But also, the only other thing that was required to believe, at least in 1853, when this letter was sent, was that people were required to accept plural marriage as an inspired doctrine. And it's just kind of ironic now that I look at the question here and what it means now, but still kind of unclear in a lot of ways what it means. I think there's always been this grappling to try to define what makes a person worthy. And sometimes there's an emphasis on conduct. Sometimes there's an emphasis on belief.
Yeah, and the fact I was going to bring that up, because temple question 7 is almost the one that you can pretty much say it goes both ways, because it's like, are you affiliating? Are you, you know, sympathetic? So it's more like a practice type thing, but yet it is generally with people who don't believe like us, or who are, you know, in open disagreement with a practice or a teaching or something. So I think that's partly why 7 is such an intriguing question, because it is that mix.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but
oh,
did you lose your momentum?
No, but I just think, you know, I think they've always just grappled with what makes a person worthy, and yeah, when it's vague, it's left to interpretation, and then the person who's sitting in judgment is the one who can interpret that, and then so it's kind of disturbing sometimes, depending on, you know, I think Lester Bush is the one who talked about before that they're compassionate bishops, they're hanging bishops, and people have often timed their confessions or their moves when they had to move, you know, accordingly. And it's almost invited, I suppose, in a sense, when things like that are left to interpretation, because you're subject to somebody's very strict interpretation or somebody's very, you know, out there interpretation on something. And so that's really where my thoughts were going on that.
Yeah. Now, Gerald Lee, I know that you were inquiring around and found some handbook of instructions kind of information about telling bishops and stake presidencies members you're not supposed to really go beyond it, and you're not really to ask a bunch of probing follow-ups, or do you have any language from that?
Yeah, I don't have that quote actually in front of me. It's fairly brief, but I do have someone who I've become friends with who is a current stake president, and I was chatting with him yesterday about this, and he said, his quote to me was, "I think priesthood leaders need to be very careful with their interpretations of the temple recommend question. In fact, I have heard that leaders are instructed not to offer any interpretations of the questions, but to simply state them as written and leave interpretation to the member being interviewed." And then he said, "The standard I try to apply with that particular question is the Savior himself. He was criticized for dining with publicans and sinners by those who sought to discredit him. I think we need to be as open to unorthodox associations as he was." And I loved that response.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, this, Claudia, maybe I want to fold you in pretty quick. Let's quickly do one thing. So Devery, I think, and Yearly, you indicated too, I think we're all in agreement that this question kind of started to show up, and it seemed to be a worry in response to fundamentalist groups, right? Would everyone agree that that's kind of probably the origins of it?
I think phrased that way, yes. I found other instances where the brethren are concerned about people joining fraternities that met in secret, or even one
meaning masonry in this case. Would that be the?
Are you talking
college fraternities?
Well, masonry kind of comes to mind for me on that, although I haven't been able to really find where they've talked about that specifically. There was always a Mormon masonry connection early on, and I don't know if there was a period where people were advised not to be Masons or not. But there were some other fraternities, and in my book, I know I was trying to find it in the index today because I couldn't remember what the group was called, but one of the presidents of the church received several letters from stake presidents asking if it's okay if someone is a member of such and such fraternity or group, and they always advised against joining them. One was a group, and I've got it here. I put a sticky on it, but I've got so many stickies in this from today. I can't find the one I'm looking for. Where by joining this group, you got some insurance benefits. You got a discount on insurance, and that's why some people wanted to join it. And they were still advising people not to take part, even if the motive was pure, because it could lead to other things. It just It puts you already in a mindset that secrecy, loyalty to some other group was all right, and it opened the door. It was just kind of seen as a slippery slope.
Okay.
And so I think you can see how that there was a concern about having other loyalties or attending some other organization and maybe getting swayed by them. And so it seems fitting, especially, early 20th century, after, we've ended polygamy, we received statehood. There was the Reed Smoot hearings where a lot of this went public, especially, with some of the famous or well-known previous oaths that were part of the temple ceremony, which have been talked about. There was a big concern there, and that would lead into it seems fitting that the fundamentalist concern would have come about that time.
Yeah.
And with the crackdown on polygamy in Utah as it was legally, that we had our own members, with the theology to deal with as well. And that seems clear to me. That's really how that evolved into that.
Yeah, I agree. And I obviously it comes up to me that it would be if you were actively anti-Mormon, you were publishing against the church or something like that, that certainly would fit this bill too. But this idea that it would be about political parties the way this bishop, and the political platform the way this bishop took care of it in Southern California, to have it be, just whether or not you agree on same-sex marriage and this current debate's It just was never there. It used to come up. People would call me when I was at Sunstone saying, if I'm a member of Sunstone, I go, well, first of all, there is no member of Sunstone. Do you subscribe to a magazine or not? But they were like worried that this Temple Recommend question was at stake. And I just don't know quite to do it. So that's Claudia. Part of the reason I wanted to bring you on is because I've just heard you just reflect in such a fresh way about this whole Temple Recommend interview process, and maybe can I prime you to talk? We mentioned the word worthiness, and it seems like this is a search for, is this member of the church worthy? Do you agree that should be the right word? Is that what you're really going for? Is worthiness? And then how does it that you approach that renewal process for yourself?
Well, I don't particularly like the word worthiness because it implies levels of being worthy, which I don't like. I don't like all judging. I don't like, I just don't like putting yourself into a position where you are being asked questions that may be difficult. Of course, I go back a long way. I remember when the questions were much more probing and embarrassing than they are now.
Mm.
And they were changed. I mean, there's nothing scriptural about these questions. They are just something that somebody put together, who knows who, and just so I don't take them too seriously. As I say, I don't argue anymore with the people. I used to say when they asked number 7, I said, well, I do work for the university, and they would dismiss that. I said, and I might occasionally make a donation to Planned Parenthood, thinking it might be another one of our problems. They didn't mind that, but so somebody had something in mind, but it's not really very clear. And because it's not clear, and because the bishops judge these things in different ways, that's why I think that it is just part of the ritual of going to the temple. These guys are, it was different in Shirley's case, but they really want to work you through in 10 minutes. You know, they don't want to talk to you for a long time. That's how they, there's usually somebody waiting and they want you just to go through the format. I think the hard thing is this business that you are supposed to answer all these questions. Then at the end, they ask you, well, are you worthy to go to the temple? And to that, I always answer, no, I'm not worthy. No one's worthy, but I'm as good as anybody else. Something like that. Because I just, you know, they hear all these questions and then, are you worthy? Well, you're supposed to say yes, and I know I should do it. Well, maybe I'll try next time. But I just think that is very hard. I don't like going in to be judged in that way. And I know it's very painful for lots of other people. But and I wanted to make a comparison to the sacrament, which everyone is entitled to take that comes to church. There's no pledge of what you believe in. There's nothing to sign. There are no questions. The sacrament is available to everybody. And I think that is in many ways much more important than the temple recommend or even the temple ritual. So that is my attitude, that I think we should be open about this. Everybody wants you to go to the temple. They just want you to embarrass yourself first. One of the questions that's asked is, should you tell everything in this temple interview? And I say, no, you shouldn't. It's a 10-minute ritual that you're supposed to go through. And you're not supposed to make any trouble on that occasion. Shirley was in a position where she didn't have a line of people waiting after her. So that's different. And if you want to go in and make large confession to the leaders of the church, you can do that, but it should be at a special appointed time. One thing I would say about the temple recommend, how do you feel when you come out of it? I don't generally feel very good. I don't like it very much. My father, who was bishop and stake president for many years, often gave temple recommends to people who were not, quote-unquote, worthy because they wanted to go to the weddings of their children, things of that sort. And he would say, let this be a new beginning for you. And I always liked that much better, because instead of dampening you for feeling like you were more evil than others, that was an encouragement to be better. I'm of the belief that we should go along with this business, that whatever we are is good enough. I don't think we should be always crossing things off our lists and trying to be better. The more we think about ourselves, the harder it is to be good people. So that's my extended answer to some of those.
Awesome. Awesome.
That kind of reminds me when I was doing my research for part one of my dialogue history, when I was reading Eugene England's correspondence, he was talking about, he had a letter in there that was written, I think his father was a temple president at one point.
Yes, yes.
Maybe even was it Salt Lake Temple?
London Temple President, Salt Lake Temple Presidency, I'm pretty sure.
And he said that he'd received a letter from Hubie Brown. Or no, he wrote a letter to Hubie Brown saying, I've got a problem here. There's a couple in my ward who, they're to be married in the temple. They went and got their endowments on such and such a day, and they're supposed to be married several days later, but in between getting their endowments and their wedding day, he didn't say what they did. He just said they technically are not worthy now to continue on and get their sealing. And he said, what do I do? They've already been endowed. And President Brown wrote back and said, Brother England, it's better to break a rule than break a heart.
Nice.
And he said to really let him go through because the damage that would have been done probably would have been worse in the long run. And I found that, you know, I think most bishops, I try to be optimistic, I guess, when I see the tithing question, I would say most members, if you ask them, do we pay tithing on our net or on our gross or what? Most people will say, oh, it's on our gross because we want gross blessings and not net blessings. I hear that one a lot.
Yeah.
But the handbook is very clear that that's up to the individual to decide based on what they think 10% is. You know, you don't have to bring your W-2s into your recommend interview and compare them against your tithing receipts to see if it comes out to 10%. I think most bishops know that when you answer that question, you're answering it honestly, but to you, 10% might mean something different than somebody else. And I think most will hold to that. But it is disturbing once in a while to, if there's something's probed beyond that inappropriately. Hopefully that's the exception, you know. And I like to believe it is, but that just reminded me of that. And I think Hubie Brown was, and Jean England, in talking about that letter, said this was a very case of wise liberalism on Elder Brown's part. And so, and I think other questions, you know, can be kind of answered in the same way. You know, an insightful bishop might see someone's returning to church for the first time in years to see a ceiling of one of their kids. Is this going to keep them in the church, or is your denial of a recommend or your probing or scolding them before you give them the recommend going to drive them out? And I think ultimately people want people to be in the church and enjoying the benefits of the temple. And that's the bottom line to me.
Yeah. I always look at the temple recommend process as just, it's a self-assessment. And that person, I like Claudia's emphasis on the, it's just a ritual. It's just a, you know, a question, a call and a response and things like this. And it isn't to be anything more than facilitating for you in a formal way to simply go through it. And I believe that if you've done that in your heart, and if you do feel, like Claudia says, we're never all going to feel like we're perfectly worthy in terms of, you know, all the ideals that we have of how we should behave and how, you know, how strong our faith should be or whatever. But I think if we've determined that ahead of time, just yes, no, you know, all the different right responses is perfectly fine. And it sounded like, Gerald Lee, you really didn't intend going in there and ask that. It just kind of occurred to you.
Right, yeah. Just a curiosity thing.
Yeah. But I do think that with this audience, and there's lots of people here who are, you know, in the early stages of a faith thing, and they want to know if they're accepted. And there's this, you know, we're in this habit of, you know, am I okay? Am I this? Am I that? Yeah. And we're always looking for other people to lead us and to tell us whether or not we have made the grade. We don't know which way is up, and we're feeling like maybe we're more marginalized, or we're not quite in the middle of the group and things like this. I understand that need to want to, you know, have, you know, to self-disclose, to tell a bishop where you are or something like that, but it's not always the wisest thing to do. I'm, you know, at least for me, my initial foray and advice would be to anybody is, you know, do self-assessment and really get a sense, do I want to go to the temple? Do I want to worship with my community in this way? And if so, other than just the straight-out behavioral ones, all the belief ones and all the way that we nuance and stuff like that, I'm just with Claudia. Just go through the motions. And then I'll just do one quick other little thing on worthiness. You know, this idea of worthiness, that's one of my least favorite terms and stuff too. And I thought Claudia was great to talk about it, how it sort of sets us up as a gradation and levels and different things like this. I mean, if we just think worthiness means are we worthy of what? And to me, I just always want to say, I am a person of worth. I'm worthy of God's love. There's nothing that the atonement can't, you know, reach down, the love that, you know, is expressed through the atonement. There's nothing that we can't change, and there's hopefulness there. And so I just love what Claudia said about her dad. Let this be a fresh start. I loved every story there for you guys. I just think that, you know, this beating ourselves up over worthiness, just know that we're worthy. God loves us no matter what. And so even if it's called a worthiness interview, I reframe that word for yourselves. That's what I say.
Amen.
I agree.
Gerald, you found the handbook thing. Do you want to just quickly, what's the advice to stake leaders or leaders?
Okay. This is under the title of General Guidelines for Issuing Recommends, and it's very brief. And the very last sentence says, interviewers should not add any requirements to those that are outlined in the Temple Recommend book, period.
Okay. Guys, I appreciate you being on as you interact with your own church leaders and things like this. I'd just love to have each of you reflect a little bit on, do you feel the need to fully self-disclose on everything, or Claudia, I think you've kind of answered that. I'll let you go ahead and just kind of just give us one more time on, you know, part of me sometimes in my brain, I just go, it's none of your dang business. And I don't think that I go really that hard in my heart, but sometimes it's in my brain. I tend to not be super self-disclosing. I tend to try to do my own inner work and only share when directly asked or something like that. But I'd love to have each of the three of you kind of reflect on that, and then we can kind of just go with any final comments.
Okay.
Well, I would just say that I would agree with you, Dan. I don't want to tell everybody everything, and I would rather be known for my works than my words. And
nice.
I try not to bother my leaders with too many of my problems. So I think I would keep my mouth shut about certain things.
Cool.
That's my statement.
Jerly?
Yeah, so as I've reflected on the experience that I had, a part of me kind of feels like I went through a little bit of an interrogation on the ward level, you know? So
mm-hmm.
In reflecting on that, I think I would make sure that didn't happen in the future. I think the important thing is that it's not an interrogation or an oral exam. And I think these questions, as I read through them, are really meant to help each of us reflect on our faith and our actions and our deeds. And I think that's the way I will approach it in the future. I will make those determinations in advance before I go in, and I'll probably keep it pretty straightforward. And I think respond honestly, but don't overthink the questions, I guess.
Yeah.
My feeling.
Awesome. Devery, any thoughts?
Well, I could think of a number of times where I did beat myself up, and I've spent much of my life feeling guilty over things I didn't have to feel guilty about. And sometimes I look back at certain sermons that I read and what I heard at the time and what I read now in those, I think I took, you know, I would hear a sermon on worthiness and then I would beat myself up, read it years later and realize I didn't have to do that. And then you have to restore in your mind this idea that you're a person of worth in that. And I think the temple recommend process can either demoralize you or it can lift you. And I suppose that depends. And if bishops stick within the questions, most of that then, the response to that depends on you then. It's left to you to make those decisions about yourself and should I be going to the temple and that. And so for me, I think, you know, I've learned a lot over those years of feeling unnecessary guilt. And I suppose I've gone in the other direction now where I feel more a person of worth no matter what I've done. I feel like I would understand that and God would understand that more than a bishop would. And so I feel like I can justifiably, with a clear conscience and with, you know, with God's backing, just answer things as I see they should be answered, knowing that a bishop probably, if I argued certain points, would see things differently, but I don't feel the need to disclose that or to put myself in a position where there are going to be some follow-up questions that risk the chance of being misunderstood, you know, by this someone like the bishop in Southern California and that, you know, why open a door that doesn't need to be opened?
Right, good line.
And so that's how I see it now. It took a long time for me to get to that point. But I think self-worth, feelings of self-worth and letting go of the feelings of guilt about little things is very liberating, but in a good way.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Well, I'm thrilled to have you guys. Question 7, any final reflections on the affiliation question or something like that? That's kind of what launched this one.
I have a couple of things I want to say. And one is that if it were up to me, I would certainly give Harry a temple recommend. I think he's been a very good public servant, and I think he certainly deserves it. And he's done a lot of good for the church. That's one thing. I want to say a nice thing about Harry Reid. The final thing I would say is that just as all of us experienced people go through the temple for somebody else and not for ourselves, I think we could think about the temple recommend businesses going through that interview for somebody else as well. And we certainly want to give them all the benefit of the doubt, not knowing them at this point. But we want them to be able to go through the temple, seeing as we're going through. And so I think we should answer with them in mind, and that would take away some of our problems.
Nice. Yeah. I thought of that too when Devery was talking last. You know, why would they want to keep us out of this? Because what we're going to the temple to do is serve. you know, to serve people we don't even know, to people who've, you know, who've died and whatnot, and to, why should we deny that? You know, this whole business of no unclean thing can enter the kingdom of God, no unclean thing can enter the temple. In some ways, I think we just we've misread that scripture. I think God is perfectly fine with us being fallible, not like perfectly fine in terms of, you know, we haven't lost our worth in God's eyes because we've messed up. What I think that whole thing is, like, if you want to become like God, guess what? You kind of have to act this way, and you're not going to be, you know, in my presence because you haven't, you know, opened to the heart of compassion or whatever phrases we could pick or something that you know, helps you on the journey to godhood. But this idea, we must protect, we must not let Satan have a foothold in the temple to come in through an unworthy heart or all that stuff, that seems like bygone era kind of stuff, don't you think? You know, to me, it just doesn't seem like it fits in the contemporary church. And so this idea that I'm the watchman on the tower and the judge in Israel, when that idea of, like, we can't let the fox in the hen house, I think that's gone, especially what Claudia just said about, you know, we're going to serve others. Go with them in your heart. Geralee, anything else on question 7 or even just final thoughts for today?
My final thoughts would just be that I think it would be completely lovely to feel like in the church we could be honest with each other, you know, that you could raise your hand in Sunday school and say, after years of being in the church, I'm not sure about this, or in your bishop's office, you know, I'm not sure about this, but I'm just not sure with how human we all are that's the reality. And so I think the important questions, as I would frame it to myself, would be, am I trying to add value to my church, or am I trying to diminish it? And that's kind of how I would decide for myself about worthiness. You know, what's the intent of my heart?
Beautiful. Thank you, my friend. Dev?
Well, I guess as I look at that question, I guess I want to look at it to see how, you know, that question is there now in all of its vague form, but it's evolved from, you know, I'm looking through my book right now and I'm reminded of things I haven't looked at for a while. So it's been fun to revisit my book. But early on, this is what, the 50s, the question was a little bit different as far as the apostate groups, children of people who were fundamentalists or part of these apostate groups, children had to demonstrate that they weren't affected by their parents' doctrines and that type of thing. So there was almost a guilt by association going in, and you were a suspect until you could prove yourself innocent. And I think nowadays that, you know, with these questions being left to the individual to decide, you know, their worthiness based on the question, based on honestly answering that question for themselves, at least that is gone, I think. I think someone who's unless they've demonstrated something to give concern themselves, if someone's going in whose parents might be fundamentalist or whatever, but you're not, and maybe you're not probed in that same way question wise now, maybe the guilt by association is gone and you're not suspect. And if that's the case, and you can just leave those questions to be answered by yourself and a bishop will accept that, if it's left at that, then that's a good evolution on that one to me.
Nice. Very good. I guess let me go for a kind of a final thought here too. I guess just a couple of thoughts. Number one is just simply the earlier questions are about sustaining. And when we sustain somebody, it doesn't mean that we agree with them. So I just think there's so much more latitude that we can give ourselves when we simply, I sustain you as the bishop, I sustain you as the prophet, and things like this. It doesn't mean that we have to agree with it. So that's one other level that we can kind of take upon ourselves to say, you know, I'm simply not rejecting out of hand what you say as advice. You know, it's not like I've pre-decided, but I'm doing what I feel like the scriptures have called me to do, what many prophets have called us before, is take seriously, weigh it for ourselves, get our own inspiration. So that's just one quick thought about that might help some people back out of this this felt need to be super disclosing. The second one is just a word that I have written down here on my paper that I haven't gotten to yet, and that word is covenant. every time we do a ritual, every time there's an ordinance, it's always in association with a covenant. And you know, everything in the temple, there's four different covenants, there's four different, you know, physical things that get done. You know, baptism associated with the covenant, the various things we do. And really, that's what temples are all about. It's the initial thing is, are you willing to make covenants with God and strive to keep those? And at that same time, that just needs to me be what's in our heart. If we're going back again and we're going to serve other people, you know, we're benefiting from doing that service. They're benefiting from the service if we believe in that theology and all that stuff. But we're benefiting from it. But I like this idea that it's just in terms of my willingness to step forward to say, this matters to me. This is something that I'm willing to do. These are promises about the type of life I want to live, and I'm grateful for the chance to stand up here, to do something physical, to have that marker in my heart that at some point I did this. And then we wear garments and we do other different things to remind us of those things. And that's just, to me, you know, almost if I were a bishop or a stake president or somebody who was in this process, I just want to keep that in mind, because I think that takes a lot of stress off individual beliefs, you know, an individual, you know, exactly how absolutely never missing on, you know, one of the behavioral type things can be. It's more the gist of the willingness in the heart to make covenants and keep them. So that would just be my closing thought.
I love it. Amen.
Great.
Well, thank you, you guys. I sure appreciate you. Claudia, thanks for being on again. I just love your just down-to-earth, practical way you teach us. So thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Jerlie, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dev, thanks, my friend.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been great to be here.
Listeners, please come to mormonmatters.org and share your own experiences, your own stories about especially question 7, but how you approach the temple recommend process. Certainly we welcome all sorts of things like that. While you're at the Mormon Matters site, please notice that there's a donate button and a subscribe button up there, and feel free to keep supporting the podcast financially. It just makes such a huge difference in my life, and I know that we're here now heading into sort of the end of year giving season, so if anybody is wondering what things to support this year with their tax-deductible donations, I hope Mormon Matters will be something that you'd consider for that. Again, thank you to my wonderful guests. Great conversation. Listeners, thank you again. And cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.